Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Iroquois Theater Fire. Here's what you need to know. Opened on November 27th, 1903, the Iroquois Theater on West Randolph Street in Chicago, Illinois, was a sight to see. Opulent and modern for its time, architect Benjamin H. Marshall had patterned it after the famous Opera Comique in Paris. No expense was spared. It cost $1.1 million to build, just under $30 million in today's money. The six-story building had huge twin Corinthian columns in its exterior and chandeliers and gold-painted 53-foot ceilings inside. It also boasted a state-of-the-art backstage with over 30 individual dressing rooms and an elevator. Only 30 years earlier, the Great Chicago Fire of 1871 had killed over 300 people and decimated over 3 square miles of the city. Following that, there had been others, including the Columbian Exposition Fire of 1893. For that reason, many marveled at the Iroquois Theater because it was advertised as being, quote, absolutely fireproof. Why would you ever say that? December 30th, less than 5 weeks after the theater had opened its doors to the public, was a chilly Chicago winter day. The Iroquois Theater was filled with teachers, mothers, and children enjoying a matinee during the holiday break. Over 1,700 people had gathered to watch a production of Mr. Bluebeard. A musical adaptation of a Grimm's fairy tale where a French lord tells his wife not to look in a closet, only for her to disobey him and find the bodies of his past seven wives inside. In this musical version, the wives were miraculously restored to life, a happy ending deemed suitable for younger audiences. The play featured aerial acts, dancers, actors masquerading as animals, and one of the most popular Irish-American song and dance men of his time, Eddie Foy. It was a spectacular show. Early in the second act came one of the biggest numbers in the production, titled The Pale Moonlight. 16 chorus members took the stage, and the house and stage lights were darkened. A spotlight, meant to represent the moon, followed the actors as they sang their number. William McCullen, a lighting operator, quoted in Portsmouth Evening News on January 2, 1904, described what happened next. Quote, "In the middle of the second act, as I changed the lights from white to blue, the arc between the carbons sputtered and struck the frayed edge of the inside border of the curtain drapery, and a flame 12 inches long shot up. I clapped my hands on it, but it spread in spite of me. I then called to have the fire curtain lowered and yelled, 'Fire! Help!' A house fireman came with a patent extinguisher, which had no effect. The sparks from the spotlight had ignited a swaying piece of scenery. Actors and audience members alike began to scream and flee as they realized the fire could not be contained. They bolted toward the exit doors, but many were hard to find in the darkness. Those in the balcony found themselves trapped. Metal accordion gates had been locked at balcony entrances to keep upper-level patrons from sneaking down to the pricier seats during intermissions. Those who could find an exit pushed themselves through choke points. Foy, who had not been on stage when the fire started, came out to try and help the agitated audience exit in a calm manner. He instructed the orchestra members, those who hadn't already escaped, to play an overture. Foy's pleas, as well as the music, seemed to help at least those in the main floor. Many were trampled in the rush to get out, but most made it out alive. This was not the case for the 900 people sitting in the balcony seats. Only a few of them were able to escape without injury. Watching from the stage, Foy wrote in his memoirs that he saw in the upper levels a, quote, "mad animal-like stampede. Their screams, groans, and snarls, the scuffle of thousands of feet and bodies grinding against bodies, merging into a crescendo, half-wail, half-roar. Many unable to find a way out, jumped to their death. Some who jumped later survived the fall only because they landed on the bodies of those who had jumped before them. By the time the firefighters arrived, 15 minutes after the fire had started, what they found was a horrific scene. Hundreds of people had clambered over each other to try to reach the door, only to worsen the situation by jamming the doors shut from the weight of the crowds pressing against them. Those who weren't suffocated by the crush most likely died from smoke inhalation or burn wounds. It is estimated that 602 people perished that day, many of them women and children. It took firemen only 30 minutes to take down the flames, as most of the building's combustible material had already been consumed. Multiple nearby businesses, including Thompson's Restaurant, were used as temporary morgues to hold the catastrophic amount of casualties. The tragic Iroquois Theater fire is credited as being one of the events that would later inspire fire safety regulations still in place today. Fun facts, aka death stats. Dr. Frank Norbury wrote in A Matinee to Remember, "The theater had seats for about 1,700, and there were about 250 in standing room that afternoon. The cast of Mr. Bluebeard was huge, about 250 players, and there were an additional 250 stagehands, technicians, and ushers in the wings. Thus, the theater contained some 2,400 people on that occasion." Only one cast member died in the fire. Nellie Reed, an aerialist who sailed across the stage to the balcony, showering the audience with flower petals, during the shows was trapped on her high wire above the stage. Of the audience of 1,900, 575, that's 30%, were killed. 212 of them children, 76 of whom were age 10 or under. Another 25 people died later from burns and injuries. Adam Groves of Illinois Library wrote, "At one locked exit, firefighters counted 200 bodies stacked 10 high and 20 deep." Don Gillen wrote in Stage Beauty, "In the black hours after the fire had been extinguished, the best and worst sides of human nature came to the fore. A few ghoulish opportunists mingled with the rescuers to move among the dead and dying, liberating them of their cash, jewelry, and furs. One of these individuals, caught by the police, was found to have in his bag the ears of several women, which he had sliced from their unfortunate owners in order to obtain their earrings." With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hi, Rebecca. Hi, Alarmy.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hello.
And our very special guest today is Betsy Stover. Hi,
hello,
Betsy.
Hello.
Betsy is the host of Why Mommy Drinks podcast. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your show?
Oh, thank you. So Why Mommy Drinks is a weekly comedy podcast. And each episode, I and whoever is the guest or whoever is my co-host, we all share a story of a time that parenthood like broke us into shells of our former human selves and drove us to drink, literally or figuratively. So by the end, it's a nice reminder that no one knows what they're doing, and even people who seem like they have it together, it's a shit show at home too. I can swear,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Yes. No. Betsy, we like to ask our guests right off the bat, what is something that is giving you anxiety these days or keeping you up at night?
I mean, I feel like I haven't slept or felt calm for like 5 years.
Wow, pre-pandemic, huh?
I mean, I don't want to get too political, but,
yeah.
Trump got into office and I was like, that's cool. I need to be on antidepressants. And I thought we were all on the same page as a nation. Guess not. Cool. Yes, pandemic. So, and the election and all of that. So, yeah, I feel like I've been anxious and not sleeping for a while.
Yeah, well, we hope you can sleep at night soon.
Thank you.
But I will say this episode is not going to help you sleep at night.
Mm. No? Okay.
I'm sorry, Betsy, but one of the most terrible episodes we've done in a long time. Just tragic. Casualty-wise, yeah. And that's why we wanted to have you on the show.
I am a bit of a true crime buff, tragedies and crime is something is enjoy the right word? I don't think so, but they're fascinating.
Right, mm-hmm. Interest. It's something of interest.
Yeah, like this has elements of triangle shirtwaist. There's all sorts of, no spoilers.
The whole time I was researching this, I couldn't get past the fact that the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire happened in 1911, which means it was 8 years later. It's so sad because I know that there were a lot of regulations that came out of it. And let me read an eyewitness account of a woman who was at the theater. And this came out January 1st, 1904, so literally 2 days later, in the Atlanta Constitution. And Miss Anne Woodward says, "I was in the second balcony and clearly saw the fire. I am a large woman weighing close to 180 pounds, and I made up my mind that if there was going to be a panic, it would be wise for me to beat it to the street. I left my seat in the balcony, went down went down the stairs to the first balcony, and from there started to pass out the very door in which so many people were killed a few moments later.
Wow.
The door was closed, and a man on the outside refused to open it so that I could not, so that I could pass out.
Whoa.
Whether he was an employee of the theater or not, I don't know, but he had evidently determined that no one should leave the theater, and in doing so, he started a panic. I was leaving quietly up to this time, but when he refused to allow me to pass peaceably, I determined to pass out if I had to make all sorts of noise. I went along the balcony about 10 feet to a glass partition and smashed it with the point of my umbrella.
I love this woman.
Go, Anne.
She is so bad. She's like, I'm a big girl and I'm not fucking around. I'm out of here.
Totally. So she says, I went out and down the stairs. When I was about halfway down, I heard the roar of the crowd as it came after me, and I hurried with all the speed I had. They overtook me, however, knocked me down. And but for the fact that I was close to the door, I think my chance of life would have been almost nothing. As it was, I think I must have walked the last 10 feet of my passage to the exit on the bodies of those who had fallen.
Oh my
God. Holy crap.
Talk about trauma. Of course, after the fire, this is according to the Chicago Death Trap book by journalist Nat Brandt, everybody afterward was washing their hands of responsibility. It was such a total loss of life that they didn't want to be connected to it if possible. The task of proving culpability became hopelessly complex. The myriad of problems that day turned into an algebra of blame.
I like that phrase.
Yeah, an algebra of blame.
I'm going to use that at home when my kids blame each other.
They're going to be like, what? What are you talking about, Mom?
Yeah, they'll like it because it has math in there.
Yeah.
That'll really speak to their sensibilities.
Yeah, right.
Just like, get out. Math, did you say, mother?
So many had failed to carry out their duties that no one source could be concretely assigned sole responsibility. An official inquest focused on the theater owners, the architect, and city officials, who in turn were quick to point the fingers, including at the victims themselves.
Oh, cool. Well, right off the bat, should we just put those three people up there? The architects, the theater owner, and the city people?
What was the last one?
The city people.
The city officials.
I said city people. Okay, city officials.
City officials. So let's talk about the owner first. The Iroquois Theater, designed by Benjamin Marshall in a Renaissance style, was highly luxurious and had been deemed fireproof upon its opening in 1903. Okay. In fact, come on. George Williams, Chicago Building Commissioner, and Fire Inspector Ed Lachlan looked over the theater in November of 1903 and declared it was fireproof beyond all doubt.
George and Ed, put them on the board, Amanda.
George and Ed.
Was there something called like an asbestos curtain back?
Yes, very good.
Thank you.
Rebecca, you're such a teacher.
Such a teacher.
Algebra, anyone? the asbestos curtain, which we'll discuss because there were some issues with it. Mm. That was one aspect of it. Also, because it had 27 or 30 exits.
Oh.
So it had a lot of exits for a building at that time. Now, 27 of those were double doors. So that's really good. However, at the same time, William Clendenin, the editor of Fireproof Magazine, which is crazy to me that there was a magazine called Fireproof.
He is fun at parties, you guys.
Well, I guess, you know, as we know, people were obsessed with fire was a big deal back then. I mean, as it still is, honestly. We live in California, so
fire. The new issue of Fireproof Magazine has arrived. What's new in the world of fireproofing?
But sadly, there had been so many building fires, and, you know, literally the city had been decimated by a fire just like 30 years later.
Right.
So, you know, everyone's got fire on their mind. So this editor says, also inspected the Iroquois Theater and wrote a scathing editorial about its fire dangers, pointing out that there was a great deal of wood trim, no fire alarm, and no sprinkler system over the stage.
This was before the fire, someone wrote that.
This is before the fire.
Yo.
There, out of the 30 exits, 27 were locked at the time of the fire.
Why in the world?
Why?
Why in the world?
What?
Because they didn't want people coming in and out who hadn't paid for a ticket.
Ugh.
They also, that was why they had put those metal gates from the balcony to the main floor so that people wouldn't sneak in during intermission to the better seats.
Keep out the hoi polloi.
What about ushers? Like, were there any ushers there?
There were ushers.
That's my question, Chris. Yeah. I feel like the ushers aren't doing their jobs.
Right.
Well, we're jumping around a little bit.
Okay.
But the ushers, just to go to it, according to history.com, the teenage ushers working the theater fled immediately, forgetting to open the locked emergency exit doors. The few doors that were able to be forced open were 4 feet above the sidewalk. 4 feet above the sidewalk. People are 5 feet. That's a lot. So, I mean, sadly, I do think we need to put these teenage ushers up on the board.
Yeesh.
Okay. They got a big bullseye on them for me.
Know. Yeah.
Oh, boy. And
totally. They weren't responsible for locking the door. The decision
they
to lock
exactly.
the doors.
That is true.
That's crazy.
But now, also, these guys were clearly asleep at the wheel. But also, this is why you maybe don't put underpaid teenagers in positions of, you know, keeping thousands of people's lives safe. I don't
totally.
Know.
This is why flight attendants, like, that's a really important job. You go to, you know, there's a lot of training, safety training that goes with a flight attendant, right? Because not only are you just, like, along for the ride and ushering people to their seat, when the shit hits the fan, they're the ones who take control. And
you're right. They're there in case shit. And ushers are there in case shit, which is probably why they're all, like, unionized by now.
Well, yeah. Have you ever? I was an usher when I was out of college in New York City at like one of these off-Broadway theaters because it was like a cheap, easy job, you know, or they an easy job. They paid me cheaply, I should say. But like I didn't. There was no training. I barely knew where the fire exits were.
Whoa.
I didn't know. No. So going back to the theater owners. According to Smithsonian, an official inquest focused on the theater's owners, and they turned the fingers to the victims themselves. The owners, Will Davis and Harry J. Powers, issued a statement in the Tribune blaming the audience for panicking, despite being admonished to be calm and avoid any rush. The architect insisted that there was ample exits and people not be cut. Had they not been panic-stricken and stunned, they would have survived.
Post-gaming this all out, I'm wondering, like, what was the ideal way that they should have reacted?
You can't control thousands of people and how they're going to react. You can't tell someone not to panic. That's the best way to get someone to panic.
Yeah, it's like if your wife is upset and you tell her to calm down, she's going to burn everything down.
I don't know. That always works for me, right, Rebecca?
It's super effective. So we had a listener write in. This is our listener suggestion, at Lynn's Olson. And she wrote, jinxing the building. So being billed as absolutely fireproof when it was indeed not fireproof is as bad as calling the Titanic unsinkable.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
As we know. Yeah. You're just asking for it.
That goes under Ed and George. I think Ed was the one. Ed Lachlan, he was a fire inspector who called it, who jinxed, according to Lynn's, jinxed.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about corruption and the city officials. So corruption in Chicago. Smithsonian Magazine says, while a direct link to corruption was never proven in court, the indifference of city officials to known violations contributed to the fact that the theater received only a cursory safety inspection before opening to the public weeks earlier.
Wow. The more things change, the more they stay the same, huh?
Ain't that truth? Right, Betsy?
I feel like Chicago is still known as sort of a corruptly run place.
Are you from Chicago, Betsy?
No, but I'm from Minnesota, and I'm an improviser. So improv comedy, you know, in America is very much born of Chicago.
Well, there's definitely a lot of corruption in the improv comedy scene. Yeah. I'll tell you that much.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Now, Mayor Carter Harrison. He's the mayor of Chicago at the time. And Chicago Eagle wrote a 1904 article that was titled Harrison to Blame. So, of course, that made me interested. The mayor, since his first election nearly 7 years ago, has never bothered himself about enforcing city ordinances. Ugh. Mayor Harrison was informed by the building commissioner, George Williams, months ago that the theaters were violating the laws and ordinances. Did Harrison act upon this report by enforcing the laws and ordinances? No. He shirked his duty entirely and turned the whole report over to the city council. The city council was not elected to enforce the laws. Harrison was elected to enforce them.
Oh, so, shit.
So, passing the buck, as they say. He just didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I think that a part of that has to do with the holidays.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
I don't want to put the holidays up, send the holidays to jail, because that is our most favorite time of year.
Are you talking about the Nancy Meyers film, Holidays?
No. I'm talking about the Christmas, Hanukkah, just the holiday
season. The general
season.
Idea of holidays, yeah. Got it.
Capitalizing during the holiday season, that was a big thing. They advertised themselves as the latest in state-of-the-art, you know, fireproof construction, and the owners anticipated opening the new theater in time to cash in for the holiday season of 1903. But the work, already scheduled at a breakneck pace, was behind, and the theater still under construction as Thanksgiving approached. Impatient owners opened the unfinished theater anyway on November 23rd and continued finishing work as the theater opened through the holiday season. Ongoing painting and varnishing gave off volatile fumes, and many of the theater's advertised fire protection features had yet to be installed.
It's the Pilgrim's fault.
I'm putting them on the board.
Thank you.
Okay, so perfect. The Pilgrims are on the board. Are we putting Santa Claus and...
Nancy Myers?
Nancy Myers. No, okay. Now I'm going to go through a list of a bunch of things that went wrong, and then we'll discuss. First, the asbestos curtain that Betsy brought up. Now, this was supposed to fall, drop completely, and allowing a sheet of flame to sweep over the audience. At first, this is according to Patricia Marks, a firestorm of criticism. At first, the insurance inspectors blamed the snag on the performance wire, in particular, the one that supported the Queen of Aerial Ballet during the performance, during her acrobatics over the heads of the audience. During the inquest, however, a stagehand, William McMullen, testified that the fire had started when a carbon arc ignited the frayed curtain. So the curtain that's supposed to stop the fire, it ignited the frayed curtain as he changed the lights for the scene. Finally, the fire inspector determined that the asbestos curtain had failed to drop completely because a 20-foot-long reflector holding incandescent lights had been allowed to remain open and so impeded the curtain's fall.
So the curtain was meant to fall as a safety precaution?
Yes, on the
precaution.
Fire. Yes.
Got it.
Oh, but, on the fire.
Yes. But that, so you know how you like stomp, like air out, you know, take out the oxygen in a fire. That's like a way to put it out.
Was it like gonna drop like a great big tent on the audience?
On the stage, if there was like a fire on the stage. Another thing was the fire, no fire escapes. Some theater goers made their way to fire escape doors on the upper floors, only to discover that the exterior fire escape ladders had not yet been installed.
Holy crap!
Yes.
That's like a horror movie.
Yes. Yes.
This is just like you're right, Betsy, the triangle shirtwaist factory.
Everything
fire.
That could have gone wrong went wrong. Here's another thing.
Wait, and really quick, that has to do with, I mean, there's no way that someone could have come to check things out and been like, yep, this is cool. Like, check. Like, you guys are fine. No, like, I'm not going to fine you anything or make you make any changes. Like, they would have seen that. And so to me, that points to what corruption and city officials right there. That's messed up.
That feels like a payoff, doesn't it? It's like, hey, don't ring any alarms. Let us open early so we can cash in on the holidays.
Wait, and really quick, when had they opened? And was this 5 weeks after they opened,
yes.
you said?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So it's directly related. Oh, gosh.
Here's another thing that didn't work. No light on the exit signs. After the fire starts, an electrical engineer who had advocated for signs to be illuminated by a source of light independent to the theater lighting system said that this had been a critical point in the tragedy since the Iroquois electricity had gone out during the blaze and people couldn't find the exits. Not just that, but they had shielded the exits with curtains, I guess because they were ugly or, you know, for aesthetic purposes.
Horrible.
That is insane.
So another thing was improper door handles, right? So the way that doors now are done is a direct result of this tragedy. So now when
Wait,
you go to a
Rebecca,
theater-
are you about to tell us that there were no door knobs on the inside of that theater? Because I feel like we're leading to that.
Well, it's because they didn't the idea was that they didn't want they wanted to control I don't know
am I right like. Were there no door knobs?
They didn't open out. They didn't, the doors didn't open out, so as bodies
opened in
up against the doors, it made it
oh my
god, really sad. So there was a guy, a hardware salesman, who had planned to be at the show that night, but for some reason wasn't there. He invented the crash bar mechanism on doors that prevent entry from the outside, yet the major concern of ticket sellers, but could be easily opened under duress, and generations of that first design have been used in public buildings for over a century.
Wow. That's that like long bar.
It's that long bar that you just push to exit.
Yeah.
That thing.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, like in movie theaters, they have them, but you can't open them from outside.
Wow, okay. I always took those for granted.
Me too.
Never Wait, so again.
That has to do with fire safety?
Yes.
Oh, so because if a throng of people are leaning on it, it'll just open? Oh my God.
That's crazy.
This was another thing maybe we should put up on the board, and I don't want to do it, but the actors.
No. No, Rebecca.
They are the most innocent, fragile flowers of all.
Do you realize the sacrifices those actors make in their craft?
They give themselves their essence.
No, we do. We do have to put them up on the board. This is, again, Patricia Marks. While the management sought to blame the spread of the fire on a draft from the front door opened by panicked members of the audience, the coroner's inquest suggests rather that the draft was created by the actors and stagehand who opened a rear door to escape.
Oh.
So they fed the fire basically because they opened a rear door.
Yeah.
I mean, they're paid to perform, right? Not to know everything about fire safety.
Yeah.
Dear God, I hope so. I mean, if I had to lead the the fire. I guess I probably would have done an open.
You can do it all, baby. You're the rare, like, double threat.
Look, in an emergency scenario, if some rando got up and started telling me what to do, and then Kate Blanchett got up and started telling me what to do, like, I'm sorry, but I'm following Kate.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wait, Amanda, are you saying that Rebecca is a double threat? She can act and she knows about fire safety?
Correct, yeah. Betsy.
Oh, I missed that.
And I'm a double threat. Oh, you can sing and dance? No, I can act and I can manage a burning building. Oh, all right.
Correct, correct. It's honestly one of the nicest compliments anyone has ever given me.
I'm impressed. No one's ever given me that compliment. So, great.
Hang out with us more and someday. Two more things. I want to put up the checked out stage hands because according to stage manager Bill Carlton, who actually went to the show with the 2,000 patrons who were there, while the other stage hands left the theater and went out for a drink, it was a spotlight operator who first noticed that one of the calcium lights seemed to have sparked a fire backstage. The cluttered area was full of fire fuel, wooden stage props, and oily rags.
Oh, shit.
Rags.
Oily rags.
The rags are back because we got so mad at rags.
The rag dealer
at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. We better put rags back up on the board.
Rags are getting another shot at going to the alarmist jail. Who knew? So, you know, that and I think just straight up not learning from the past, because this isn't the first fire. There were a bunch of fires between, you know, 1900, like just in the year before that had really, you know, caused a lot of damage in Chicago. So... Mm.
So those stagehands were supposed to be backstage and they just like buggered off.
Yeah, they're just like, you know, while the show goes on, like, we don't really have to do much work. We have to pause. Instead of cleaning up, they're just like, we'll come back and clean up later.
Boo.
Okay, so let's take a quick break, and then we're going to start knocking things off the list.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Who's to blame for the Iroquois Theater fire? Is it the theater owners? The architect? City officials? Teenage ushers? George Williams, Ed Lachlan, Jinxing the Building, Chicago Corruption, Mayor Carter Harrison, Pilgrims, Greed, The Asbestos Curtain, No Fire Escapes, No Light on the Exit Signs, Improper Door Handles, The Actors, The Checked Out Stagehands, Oil Rags, or Not Learning from the Past.
Before we start knocking things off, I just want to point out that Amanda wrote down Greed and then in parentheses wrote, took the liberty. So didn't mention it to us, just wrote it down herself.
Slipped it in there?
And then I slipped it in there.
Gotcha.
I mean, we were circling it. We were circling it. I thought, I just throw it up there. I know they're going to get to it eventually.
You know what, Amanda? You've been producing this show for a long time. We'll let it slip.
So what can we knock off the bat?
Well, all of these specific improper door handles, asbestos curtains, no fire escapes, no lights on the exit signs, maybe those can all be wrapped up into something else, mm-hmm. like corruption or the owners.
Or Ed Laughlin. I mean, the buck is supposed to sort of, like, he's kind of the last checks and balances, and Ed Laughlin really failed at that.
Yes, I think you're right. And he's the just fire inspector. To remind, he's the fire inspector, yeah.
It's like, it's right there in the title of your job, buddy. It's like, you have to inspect the area for fire hazards.
So, like, he should have been like, that asbestos curtain is being, like, blocked by that wire. Those lights need, those exit signs need lights. You need fire escapes here and door handles. And, like, don't maybe keep oily rags near your lights and stuff.
Betsy, so, like, you would have done a better job. You are a double threat.
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Rebecca. I'm so proud. I'm so proud.
Now, I feel like we can take the teenage ushers off, too, because of what we were saying. It's like...
Teenagers, you know, that, are dumb. They're... they can't.
That's on the... Yeah, we fold those into the theater owners, you know, for or whoever's managing the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. pilgrims could probably come off the list as well.
All right.
Sad, but okay.
Now, and what about the actors? I'll take Chris's side on this.
Yeah, the actors can come.
I just feel like they sacrificed so much already. It's just by exposing their souls for all to see.
Okay. All right. the oiled rags. If anything, that falls on the stage hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not learning from the past. I mean, come on, people.
I mean, go on.
It's true, but you should definitely try and learn from the past. Hence the Alarmist podcast. However, it's a bit broad, don't you think, for this particular...
I guess a lot of catastrophes could be solved if we just learn from the past.
Yeah. We can roll that into the podcast. Owners.
Yeah, yeah. If there was an Alarmist podcast in 1903, now, which there could have been because radio was a thing. Yes, Betsy?
Remind me why the architect should be to blame.
Mm. They did.
I don't think we ever said they
They did. They were the ones who, like, designed the fire safety.
But it sounds like at every turn, whatever the architect would have put into place, other people thwarted with their sort of lack of attention to detail or just simple fire safety.
I agree. It's like, at the end of the day, the fire marshal really has to, or the inspector has to come in and be like, you need this.
Should we wrap the fire inspector Ed Laughlin and the building commissioner George Williams into city officials so they kind of go together? Or do we like keeping them separate?
I'm a fan of what you just said.
Yeah, because I would say, can we call them corrupt city officials?
Oh, yes. And then maybe we'll take off Chicago corruption.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got to think, and it's a bit of a stretch in fairness. We don't know if Ed Lachlan was just a bad fire inspector or if he was in somebody's pocket and getting paid off and part of the corruption, in fairness to Ed.
Well, wait, but if Ed's job is to be like, this place is great, he went And he saw that there were no fire escapes and was like, cool, see you later.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely suspicious.
I think we gotta, you gotta just believe this one had something to do.
Yeah.
He turned a blind eye.
Yes.
Why are you defending Ed?
Yeah, what's up with you?
I think Chris is getting paid.
He's getting paid off.
He's getting paid off.
Oh my God. So, okay, so we have theater owners, corrupt city officials, jinxing the building, Mayor Carter Harris, greed, and checked out stagehands. I think we can take the stagehands out right now. It's bigger than them.
I mean, oh, sorry.
Yeah. No,
Mayor Carter Harrison certainly fits under the umbrella of corporate Chicago city officials.
Of the corrupt, yeah. Because he's, I would agree.
Did I just say corporate?
You said corporate. Yeah. But I knew what you meant. So jinxing the building, like, I get it. You should never do that. But I don't think that's what actually caused the fire, you know.
Yeah,
the
that's disaster. Right up there with not learning from the past.
Yeah. Like, but also, well, don't let that be a lesson.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't do these things or do them either way. Do learn from the past. Do not jinx your building. Mm-hmm.
So we have theater owners, corrupt city officials, and greed. What are we going to send to the alarmist jail? And what is getting the big slap? I'll tell you where I'm at.
Go.
I think we give the corrupt city officials, I'm sorry, we send them to the alarmist jail and we give the theater owners the big slap. Because I think that they were going to try and get away with whatever they could get away with. And the city officials are elected for a reason. Like that, person in the article said, it's like we elected them to make sure that we're safe, right?
Yeah. They are public servants who are there getting paid tax dollars, one would assume, even back then. And you're right. Theater owners, they're just there to make a buck. And they're going to try to get away with as much as they can. But the city officials are supposed to be the ones who are like, no, you can't be a dum-dum. You have to protect the people who put us in our positions and pay for our, salaries.
And this is a city that has gone through multiple fires in the last 30 years, not to mention a really big one. Heard of it? The Great Chicago Fire.
Hello.
It was so great. It was like the best Chicago fire of all time.
I can't believe we're kind of doing these out of order because I'm assuming we'll do that one.
Yeah,
at
we'll
some
do
point.
That. we'll do that later. But it's like they have a magazine. The city has a magazine called Fireproof.
Is it just for the city? It's not even a nationwide.
I don't know.
Okay. I love the idea, though, that there's so many fires in Chicago. They're like, we need our own Fireproof magazine just for Chicago. It's so fiery here.
We got to find out if it's a national magazine or not. Chris is on it.
Oh, my God. Los Angeles needs that magazine right now in 2021.
Yeah, sadly, we do. Okay. I'm going to call it. Theater owners of the Iroquois Theater, you're getting the big slap. Corrupt Chicago city officials, you're going to the alarmist jail. So, Betsy, thank you so much for joining us and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for the Iroquois Theater fire, a terrible tragedy.
I love justice. I love mysteries. I love crimes. And this was like, and I love, Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, Titanic. It's all in there.
It's all connected. And, we're justice people too. We're justice people too.
After the Iroquois Theater fire, new regulations were set in place. According to Smithsonian Magazine, within days, the city shuttered all theaters in its jurisdiction until they could be inspected and repaired to standard. And national headlines forced other cities across the country to subject their own theaters to similar scrutiny. Within weeks, Chicago's city council passed a new building ordinance by an overwhelming majority that compelled structural changes, including new standards for aisles and exits, the use of fireproofing solution on scenery, connected fire alarms, limits on occupancy, the elimination of standing tickets, changes to sprinkler requirements, and rules for rooftop flues, like those nailed shut in the Iroquois. Among the enduring changes were the stipulations pertaining to the lighting of exits, aisles, and corridors, including the requirement that a red light be kept burning over the exits during performances. The Iroquois fire also inspired the development of panic bars found on emergency exits. According to DailyCos.com, no city official served any jail time or paid any fines. The theater owners declared bankruptcy. Neither the victims injured in the fire nor the relatives of those who perished ever collected a dime for their losses. Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at The Alarmist The on Twitter, at The Alarmist Podcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We're discussing the Bernie Madoff scheme.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.